tomatoes, they seem, you know, like these.
It's a sunny 80-degree morning at the Overland Park Farmers Market. The farmers say we're just getting to the peak of tomato season. It's late this year. Jerry Newman of Providence Farms shows off what he's got.
The heirlooms up here on the front, they're different varieties. And they're a little softer, a little thinner skinned, a little meatier. They're not so pretty, but the flavor is really there. Then I just have green for fried green tomatoes. Then we have the nice red slicers, which are in the beefsteak family. There's a lot of people that are like a traditional. They've been conditioned to eat red, and they only want red. Cherry tomatoes is kind of like little dogs. There's a lot of bark, you know. They got something to prove. So cherry tomatoes have something to prove versus a big tomato. So there's like a lot of more punch in a small tomato. You get a lot more flavor sometimes in the cherry tomatoes. They just really...
With tomatoes, it's not just flavor and color that vary. Prices are all over the map, too. When we stopped by the Overland Park Farmers Market yesterday, tomatoes cost anywhere from $3 to $5 a pound, and that's just in one location. That sounds like a pretty significant range to us. We all probably have our own theories about the differences between a cheap tomato and a spendy one, but today on Central Standard, we're going to take a closer look. I'm Gina Kaufman. With me in the studio are a couple of guests. Stu Schaefer runs the Sustainable Agriculture Entrepreneurship Certificate Program at Johnson County Community College. Welcome to Central Standard, Stu.
Thanks, Gina.
And a man whose Twitter handle caught our attention. He goes by @KCTomato, but his real name is Keith Mueller. Keith, beyond a Twitter handle, what's your relationship with tomatoes?
I've been a tomato breeder for quite a while. I have a background in horticulture, and I got interested in tomatoes by attending the graduate program at North Carolina State. And tomatoes are easy to work with, and I've just kind of stuck with it because I thought there were improvements to do. So,
what kinds of improvements?
Particularly flavor, especially when I was working there.
Are we talking about?
That would be 93 to 95. The majority of – even if you went to K-State's website and you looked at the recommended tomatoes, the tomatoes from the program I worked on are 40% of what they recommend. It's a very successful program, but it's geared towards the market of getting something to the market, firm, ripe, and perfect looking. And I questioned back then why aren't they having flavor? And I met somebody when I was in North Carolina who's got a book coming out, Craig LaHoulier, called Epic Tomatoes. But he looked into the USDA and found all these old varieties really before heirloom. A lot of people were really looking at heirlooms. And I was like, well, why don't we take those and put them with the advanced lines that we have to make these new lines?
Well, before we get too deep into this, I wonder what you think of this $3 to $5 price range for tomatoes at a single farmer's market on a single day. What's going on there?
Well, you pay if you want something good, you pay for it. And
do you really think that price across the board reflects quality?
It can, and I think it does in some cases. You have to be a smart shopper and shop for it because, you know, the market – if you can get it, why not charge it? But it has to do with a person's production techniques and the cost to that individual.
And you mentioned being a smart shopper. What would be your main tips as far as that's concerned?
Ask for a sample. If you're really interested in flavor, ask for a sample. They'll probably give you a sample. You look at the tomato, make sure that it looks good. It doesn't have any mold or anything on it. If you're going to hold it for a few days, actually make sure it's picked a little bit early.
And that's just a question you can ask the grower?
Right. And you can also kind of tell by color and firmness, especially even with the heirlooms.
Well, Stu, what about you? What are your thoughts about a price range of $2, basically, at a single farmer's market on a single day? That goes against a lot of ideas about how pricing works. You'd think that the people with the lower prices would just be selling the most tomatoes.
Could be, but there could also be some differences in the types of tomatoes that they're selling. So I would guess that someone who is promoting and selling heirloom tomatoes is going to set that higher price. That's usually what happens. And they're the better flavor, better tasting tomatoes.
Can I just jump in there?
Sure.
That term heirloom is one that people might have varying levels of understanding of. It's a term that's thrown around a lot, but what does it actually mean?
It usually means a variety that has been kept through generations, multiple generations, in a particular community or family. There are different there's no firm definition of it, but it's a variety that is open pollinated, meaning that it breeds the same every time. It's not a hybrid. It's not a combination of two varieties. And so you can save the seeds and replant them the next year and get the same tomato.
How do farmers price their wares in general?
Well, I think Keith said something to the effect that if you can sell it for that, that's what you aim for.
So the market determines the cost of most of what we buy at the grocery store?
At the grocery store, I think there are a lot of other factors, but certainly the market in general as a general concept is influential on that.
I would add, too, that a smart grower will look into their production costs, and if they don't get their price, they shouldn't sell it. There are a lot of people who are inexperienced who will dump on the market.
What are the options other than selling it once you've grown it?
To be honest, a lot of people dump it. Now, probably not here in local things, but in larger markets, if the market's flooded, we're in a glut right now. Some of the growers will just throw it out rather than do that, which is really sad. And it's part of the reason that I left the produce market because those things upset me. But they could donate it. Some people donate it. Some other people find other uses for it. Just be creative.
Well, do market considerations like how much you can sell a tomato for affect the growing decisions themselves fairly early on in the process, or is that a final step type thing?
No, that should be a consideration for a grower who's going to be a market grower. If you're growing for market and you're trying to make some money at what you're doing, you should pay attention to those things and put that into your planning. So people plan how many tomato plants they're going to put out. With an idea of how much they're going to produce and how much they're going to be able to sell. Of course, there's a lot of variables, and you never know exactly. You can have a glut like we have now.
We have a very smart listenership, and a lot of people might be sort of skeptical. They don't want to be had at the farmer's market, or they don't want to feel like they're being duped into paying a higher price for something than they should be paying, than it's worth. And I guess most people are buying tomatoes because of how they taste. So we got into this a little bit, but do you think that the cost of a tomato and the taste of that same tomato are very closely linked?
They can be. I would look at the broader picture and go into grocery markets about how things are priced. But as far as a farmer's market, and there's a lot of study on it, flavor, but people buy with their eyes.
Yeah, there's I love this old song, this old country song that has a line. There's only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. And I think what people are looking for at the farmer's market and why they're willing to pay a higher price for what they get there, $5 a pound, when they could go to the grocery store and pay, I don't know, $1 a pound. I don't know what they're going for in the grocery store right now, so probably around that. I know the wholesale price is probably 50 cents a pound for tomatoes that are mass produced in Mexico or California or Florida. But people know those tomatoes don't taste like the ones they get at the farmer's market, so they're willing to pay for that quality.
Well, let's hear what our listeners had to tell us about the cost of a tomato in their neck of the woods.
Why don't you talk to me? Why don't you talk to me?
This week, we're joined, as always, by social media producer Allison Rollis. She's here for our Tell KCUR segment. And Allison, what did we ask our listeners to do for us this week?
Gina, well, we actually for the past 2 weeks, we've been asking our listeners online and on the air, how much does a tomato in Kansas City or the Midwest cost?
Well, where did our responses come from?
Well, we got them really from all over the metro, but really the metro core. So I would say mainly Kansas City, Missouri, and then like the bulk of Johnson County. But we did get some from more of the suburbs like Raymore, Independence, Raytown, Brookside, Lee Summit, and even Centerview on the Missouri side. And then in Kansas, We got it as far away as Ottawa and Topeka, and then closer to home, Overland Park, Merriam, and Leawood. So all over the metro.
And what was kind of the range of prices for tomatoes? Because we are in the height of tomato season right now.
Yes, definitely. There was a pretty big range. Like the cheapest I saw was 73 cents a piece for heirlooms at the Independence Farmers Market. But then kind of along the like the typical low was $1.99 a pound or 99 cents a pound. And those were actually both found from the Price Chopper in Brookside.
Interesting.
And then as far as the most expensive end, there were some people that paid $5 for a single tomato at Anton's Tap Room, and that's a steakhouse on Main Street. And so,
they just bought the tomato standalone from the steakhouse?
I think it's an appetizer or something, and they sell the tomatoes sliced up with just a little bit of seasoning, but they're not dressing it up too much. So that was quite pricey, but it was more of a restaurant. Someone from Kansas City said that they paid $7 per tomato at McGonigal's and Kobenstein's Gourmet Produce. That's at 79th and Ward Parkway. Now, $7 for a tomato sounded awfully high to me.
It did to me as well.
So I called McGonigal's and they explained that they charge $5.99 per pound, but some of these tomatoes are absolutely enormous. And so it is possible that someone paid $7 for a tomato.
But a tomato that could feed a village.
Sounds like it, or, you know, a small village.
So there are some distinctions you've already mentioned, like the small grocery store-bought tomato and then the sort of niche market, big, giant heirloom tomato to the restaurant appetizer. Are there any other variety kinds of distinctions you'd like to make? Like, what about cherry tomatoes, say?
Yeah, we asked people to go on and fill out a form for us, and we asked them the price, kind of what they paid per pound or pint. We asked them where they got the tomatoes, and then we asked them what type of tomato it was. And, like, I think the selections we gave them were just a regular old tomato, which is what a lot of people are buying at the grocery store. I don't know what they're getting. Plum tomatoes, Roma tomatoes, cherry tomatoes. We put heirloom and I believe beefsteak tomatoes, and then I think we backed off and let people just tell us. And people pretty much stuck within those boundaries.
What is it that people seem to be gravitating toward?
A lot of people kind of grow their own tomatoes, and so they were just kind of mentioning those. We did get a lot of cherries and a lot of heirlooms this time of year.
What about the growing your own tomato? Did people kind of come to a number in terms of what each tomato is costing them to grow the tomato at home?
Well, sort of. If we had actually done like a technical average where we calculated everything, the grow your tomatoes at home people would have really thrown off the average, because there were a lot of people that said it was free for their tomatoes, or their tomatoes were free because they grew them at home. And we had some people that said that maybe amounted to 5 cents a tomato. And then other people were a little bit more liberal. For instance, our longtime announcer, Kim Noble, she said her tomatoes cost $90 a pound. And, like, she kind of factored in the plants, the seeds, the water.
Yeah, the water bills.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I highly doubt you could really pay nothing.
Exactly. And then she said, and they really probably cost more because it didn't include her chiropractic bills. But yeah, there are a lot of people that actually grow them at home. In fact, we also asked people to tell us their tomato stories, and most of those were around growing tomatoes at home. And I've got a few of them, if it's okay
to
talk about them. For instance, Craig from Kansas City, he talked about one of the best benefits of growing your own tomatoes. Well, one, they're fresh, they're good, they're cheap. He said, but then later in the winter, you get to eat canned tomato sauce with homemade noodles. And, you know, that sounds good. Maybe I'll start growing more tomatoes at home.
That does sound good.
But then we actually had a lot of people talk about the drawbacks, like, even though growing your own tomatoes, that's awesome. But someone in Brookside said, if you don't want to be disappointed, you have to grow enough tomatoes to take care of the neighborhood's squirrel population's needs and wants. So,
good point.
And then this was actually a little bit more serious. Someone from Linwood talked about how they usually sell their tomatoes at a farmer's market in Shawnee, Kansas. But they said this year has just been really bad for growers. And she talks a little bit about why. I'm going to read a little bit of her note. She said, the amount of tomatoes is really down this year. Everything is like a month behind. The temperature at night is so critical, and it's been too cool at night, and that really slows everything down. Now it's too dry, and that means more work and more insect damage. And people just want perfect tomatoes, and any blemish, they just turn their heads. So this year, I'm too tired and fed up and keeping the few for myself.
Unreasonable standards of beauty for tomatoes. That's a new one. But this idea that there are people out there who would kind of like a hotter summer is maybe something we should keep in mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been out at the farmers markets. The tomatoes look beautiful to me this year, but what do I know? But I made a couple other stories. This woman, Peg in Brookside, she talks about how it was the first time her mother grew tomatoes. And quote, she said, "They were taking an eternity to turn from green to red. And all of a sudden, one was very, very red. We were all so excited. When Mom picked it out, she found out that her very, very red tomato was actually tied to the vine with a twist tie." She said our neighbor had pranked us yet again. So we had lots of little stories about that, and almost all tied to growing tomatoes at home.
Did we have any stories about from tomato shoppers?
Not really. You know, we thought we'd hear people talk about, you know, how you squeeze a tomato or kind of what makes a tomato awesome. How do you pick a tomato? And nope, no one really said anything about that.
Allison, do you come away from this with any big takeaway that maybe you weren't expecting, from something sort of like frivolous and silly maybe to maybe even a substantial observation?
Well, I guess I need to head to Independence for some cheap tomatoes. I mean, 73 cents a piece is pretty good. And I don't know if I should go to Anton's or not for $5 a tomato. But
it does kind of make you wonder what they're doing to those tomatoes.
Really, it's probably the biggest takeaway is my husband and I do grow tomatoes at home. Not that many. I think we had 3 plants this year. And it's kind of nice to know we weren't the only ones plagued by squirrels. A lot of people kind of chimed in about how the squirrels ate their tomatoes.
Allison, thank you so much for sharing all of the results this week. And how can people continue this conversation about the tomato economy of Kansas City?
You can tweet us and use the hashtag TellKCUR. But really, we'd still love to get your feedback. Just go to KCUR.org and click on the big red tomato and fill out our form.
Thanks so much. It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Gina.
And we're also mapping the tomato costs in Kansas City, so you can find that map that we're creating at kcur.org. I'm Gina Kaufman. You're listening to Central Standard, and we're going to take a short break. But when we come back, we'll get more on farming and food prices from our in-studio guests as tomato season finally hits Kansas City. Stay tuned.
You say either, and I say either. You say neither, and I say neither. Either, either, neither, neither. Let's call the whole thing off. For you like this and the other, while I go for this and that. Goodness knows what the end will be. Oh, I don't know.
Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, here with a couple of expert guests who can talk about all things tomato. Could you reintroduce yourselves for our listeners?
I'm Keith Mueller.
I'm Stu Schaefer.
And we've been talking so far about the huge range of prices for tomatoes in and around Kansas City. Just before break, in our Tell KCUR segment, we heard someone comment that it's a bad year for tomato growers. Is that the general consensus?
I wouldn't say it's a bad year. It's starting to really pick up. It sounds like maybe some of those recordings were done during that hot spell, just before we got the rain and the cool down. Yeah, the tomatoes were really slow ripening this year because of the unusually cool weather we've had.
So maybe a late season more than a bad season.
I think a late season. Yeah, we'll see. You know, we may get an early frost and it may cut us short too. So we don't know.
I think a little bit differently about them because of what I'm doing.
And remind our listeners what you're doing.
I breed tomatoes and I really focus in on flavor, and I grow them a certain way to try to develop that flavor more. So that affects what I'm seeing. But last year would be a vintage year for flavor. The production wasn't high, but that heat and that dry really kicked up and amped the flavor of what you did get.
What is a vintage year?
A vintage year to me is when the flavor's really enhanced. If we get cool weather, cloudy weather, or a lot of rain, the tomatoes don't have as intense flavor. It's sunlight and heat which really affect the flavor of the tomato, involved with genetics, but it's those factors that really change the flavor. And this year we seem to have, we do have a delayed season, but we have a lot of production. And it's like all of a sudden, boom.
Speaking of all of a sudden, boom, you have a tray of tomatoes that you've brought in. Are these things that have recently come off the vines in your garden?
I picked most of them this morning. They're all lines that I've been developing, so they're different flavors, and they're different genes that they discovered in the 50s, tomato geneticists discovered in the 50s. And because of my connections to the universities and whatnot, I can get access to these. They've just never used them, and I've kind of thought when I was looking at things, why aren't these used? And so I've been trying to incorporate those into both hybrid lines and some of those developed lines I was talking about that the universities make to put disease resistance into other lines.
So speaking of growing tomatoes, we heard a lot about growing your own in your backyard, and it sounds like a lot of our listeners are trying that. Do you have tips, do's and don'ts for, first of all, for a great tasting tomato?
For me, it's a lot of it's water and heat. I do something, and one of the growers I work with, the Kurlbaums, are out in Kansas City, Kansas, and we do something. My grandfather taught me this. He was a truck farmer, and it's called dry land farming. And what it is you put the tomatoes in deep, you work the soil deep, you water them to get them started, then you mulch real heavy, and then you don't water them. And my grandfather said they're finding their own root, but what he meant was the roots are going down deeper into the soil where there is moisture, and they're not subjected to this up and down and watering. So tomatoes grown on plastic or heavily irrigated, the roots are kept up close to the top. And if you can cut back water before you harvest, it will intensify the flavor, not as much with some as other crops.
Yeah, I agree with Keith entirely on all of that. If you get the roots deep, it's not just that the plants are able to access the water in the soil deeper, but it's also the nutrients in the soil that they're using to build their tissues and put all the various compounds and flavors and phytonutrients and good antioxidants into the tomatoes that make tomatoes not only great tasting but very healthy as well.
Well, what about keeping the growing costs to a minimum? And the tasty tomatoes to a maximum?
Again, if you can use good cultivation practices, some of the things Keith mentioned, plant your tomatoes deep, use thick, heavy mulch. I like to use organic mulches or, mown hay kind of mulches that break down slowly and add nutrients to the soil. But also it's very important to rotate tomatoes and not grow them in the same soil year after year. Now, breeders are developing techniques to deal with that because some growers like to grow the tomatoes in the same place and especially in covered, high tunnel plastic. But I think it's really important to move tomatoes around because that's how you avoid the kinds of diseases that will infect tomatoes that are also enhanced by cloudy, rainy, cold kind of conditions as well.
I'm imagining that when it comes to farmers, people who are growing tomatoes professionally and hoping to turn a profit, some of the same applies. What are the factors that figure into the economics of tomato farming?
Again, you want to make sure that your soil is in really good shape. You want to have good, fertile soil. You want to have great soil practices so that your productivity is high. You want to manage your water carefully. I mean, you're wasting money if you're pouring too much water on tomatoes and actually hurting the tomatoes.
Let's talk about water for a second. I'm guessing that in a particularly hot, dry season, that a grower's water bills could skyrocket. Does that affect the prices on the tomatoes?
That would be hard for me to say because I don't grow that way. But yeah, it could. It takes up your time. It takes up your resources, and it depends on a grower's source of water, whether they're using a pump or something like that they have to run.
Does soil quality in a particular region affect the cost of growing tomatoes in that spot?
Yeah, I think some places don't grow tomatoes as well as other places. That's why, commercial tomato production is concentrated in the hotter, drier areas. But people can grow tomatoes in lots of different places. Varieties have been bred for conditions, into the north, but they do tend to grow better in other places.
Some of the other factors, too, about the soil. If you have a sandy soil, you're going to have to fertilize more frequently because it's going to drain away and it won't hold it. Clay soils will hold on to those minerals and make them – they're a little bit less available, but they'll make them stay there. And the other that I was thinking about would be I lost my thought. I won't go there.
Can I add one thing to that?
Sure.
I'm I use organic practices because I, you know, I think they're more sustainable and work better. And you know, in organic practices, we also work on building up the health of the soil. And by health of the soil, we mean you have a real biodiversity in the soil of organisms. And when you have that, it also enhances the, you know, the flavor and healthiness of the plants and the tomatoes. So
I do want to talk about how philosophy in terms of dealing with things like insects and diseases that can afflict tomato plants, how those decisions about whether you're going to use the chemical solutions or the natural organic type solutions affect pricing. Because I think a lot of people do have an okay time paying more when they feel like some value is being expressed, a personal value.
I think that's a great question. I think that's one of the reasons that organic and local and small scale grown tomatoes have a higher price, because it's more labor intensive to grow tomatoes in those ways, or any vegetable really. So the labor cost is actually higher for that, and the price needs to reflect all of the costs, including the labor cost.
I'd agree with that too, and I would add that some growers get organic certification. It's a voluntary thing, but if you're going to say you're organic, the USDA requires you to get certification. That costs quite a bit depending on what you're trying to do and what you need to be inspected for. The cost comparing organic chemicals to conventionals is usually quite high. Something that's a fungicide, which are real prevalent here, there's something they use called actinovate. And it's pretty expensive, and it can cost you quite a bit an acre to put that on compared to a conventional chemical, which is widely marketed and easily available. It can be quite a bit, significantly. You may pay $100 to apply a chemical one time, but for an organic, you may pay something like $20 per acre for that one time. And you may have to do organics more frequently.
I have another fairly specific question about the economics of tomato growing and selling. I wonder how much the farmers' other sources of income have to do with this, because there was a recent article in the New York Times that said that most farmers operate at a loss and that 91% of all farm households rely on multiple sources of income.
Well, do you want to take that, Sid?
Yeah, that's true. So you have that influencing, you know, the decisions of farmers as well, because if they have a source of income that's supporting them, they can afford maybe to have a lower margin or take a loss. I would guess, for example, your first question, the difference between $3 and $5 at a farmer's market. Sometimes you get farmers or people going to a farmer's market who are, you know, growing their tomatoes on the side, and they've got another source of income, and they just, you know, sometimes called hobby farmers, and they can afford to take a price like that, which really is, you know, not so good for farmers who are trying to make a living, because that kind of draws the price down somewhat.
The statistic that most farmers are operating at a loss is really harrowing. I mean, no one likes to spend more than they need to when they're buying a tomato. But could you talk a little bit more about how that context affects the big picture when you visit one of these markets?
Yeah, I think people should be aware that, you know, Americans spend a very small portion nowadays of their income on food.
What do you think about this, Keith?
I think we should support growers more. There needs to be more of a connection between growers and the consumers. And if think about that, you're willing to help somebody out. Some of these growers have significant costs. We haven't discussed like what's called GAP certification. That's required now to get into some markets. That's very expensive. So there's all these added costs that most people don't think about. And I was working with somebody in Osceola, and I stopped doing it because just the price of gas going back and forth was so phenomenal compared to, I think I started working with them around 2001 or something.
And thinking about the transportation cost to get the tomatoes to the market, depending on the distance you're traveling as an individual farmer, I could think that would make a big difference too. Just is it even worth it to go?
It does. And it also affects that price that you saw in the grocery store of like $1.50 a pound. I just don't see how a farmer could make that. I mean, but I know what they're doing. They're dumping on the auction markets, and they're able to get into the grocery stores that way, their product, because those repacking facilities are GAP certified. And so they're able to get in there. And there's one Del Monte down in Doremus, and there's another one out in Rich Hill. So you see these tomatoes coming from Rich Hill. They're from those repacking houses.
Well, or California or Mexico, and yeah. You know, they ship them in semi-trucks.
Well, let's hear about the considerations that affect farmers of tomatoes at the ground level with a short visit to a tomato farm. Harvest Public Media's Christopher Husted went to Herman's Farm in St. Charles, Missouri, and brought us this story.
In the back of a barn off Highway 94, Elsie Goki holds a rag and stands at a table surrounded by buckets of fat red tomatoes. It's been raining off and on this early August day, and the tomato pickers have been rushing the ripe ones into the barn.
I'm just wiping them off because they were wet. I usually don't do this.
Yeah, we don't have to.
I usually stand up in front and wait on customers.
They grow a variety called Red Deuce, and they're huge. Her husband, Tom, picks up a tomato the size of a teapot.
Isn't this sad? Look at that. How beautiful that is. Display.
A crack runs the length of the tomato from top to bottom. Goki says it got too much rain while it ripened on the vine.
And it's no good no more. Now we just throw it away. But what a shame. Look how beautiful.
Oh, we can eat.
Look how thick they are. Well, there's so many of them. You know?
I know.
Although the rain has cost the Gokis a few tomatoes today, they've had a successful growing season so far. Tom Goki says it cost him about $15,000 to put in an acre of tomatoes. This year he planted 3 acres. At about 5,000 plants per acre, he's mid-sized with at least 15,000 plants.
Notice how thick they're hanging on here? We've been picking on this block of tomatoes for the last 5 weeks, and they're still producing.
Goki grew up in a tomato farming family. He says the cost of labor has dropped dramatically since he was a kid, thanks to advances in technology and equipment. Just a decade ago, he says each tomato plant had to have its own stake. Now, they stake every few plants and run twine between them for support.
There's only 20% of the labor that goes into raising this acre of tomatoes today than it was 25 years ago.
But not all costs have dropped. Seed that used to cost $16 an ounce can go for 100 times that today.
But they've got so much more disease resistance built into them that you don't have to give them so much tender love and care like you did years ago because they were so touchy.
Advancements in fertilizer and fungicides have forced Goki to dig deeper into his wallet. He says the chemical bill used to run him about $7,000 for 30 acres. Now that chunk of change only covers 8 acres.
A sack of fertilizer 20 years ago was $5. Okay, now it's $25. And it goes on and on. You know.
Running a tomato farm is risky, Goki says. A bad year of pests, and you're out thousands of dollars. But those pricier products help protect his livelihood by keeping his plants healthy and productive.
If I average a buck to a buck and a half a pound, and I pretty much do, okay, and if everything works out well, don't have any hail and everything like that, I could possibly pull easily 50,000 pounds, okay, and actually gross that much money off of an acre of tomato.
That's 50,000 pounds per acre in a good year. Wholesale, each pound goes for $1.50. Of course, at the grocery store, you'll probably see these tomatoes at about $3.
Christopher Husted of Harvest Public Media brought us that report. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll talk about something that's been missing from this tomato talk so far, or mostly missing anyway, the taste of tomatoes. We'll get some good recipes and we'll share some tomato tasting tips. Central Standard will be right back.
The sun has left and forgotten me. It's dark, I cannot see.
Okay, we're back in the studio with Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Stu Schaefer of Johnson County Community College's Sustainable Agriculture Entrepreneurship Program and Keith Mueller, known on Twitter as KC Tomato. But now I want to talk about eating tomatoes, and for that we have Dave Crum. He's worked in some of the most revered restaurant kitchens in town and is currently with Arrowhead Specialty Meats, in addition to being a farmhand with Crum's family heirlooms. Hi, Dave.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How about you?
Doing very well.
What is the taste of a tomato really about for most people? What makes the difference between an amazing tomato and one that's just like, meh?
Well, nobody wants to have a mushy, cardboardy December tomato.
I'm grossed out just listening to you.
Certainly. That we want the ideal bright summer sweetness, acidity, balance of flavor of a good field-grown, ripe-picked tomato.
Can I make a confession here? Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I really hated tomatoes, and then I made a concerted effort to start liking them because they're pretty. And it worked, and I love tomatoes now. But what I used to not like is the ratio of, like, juice and fluid to flavor. Like, that ratio seemed sort of off in the tomato picture. But do you know what I'm talking about?
There's a jelly-like texture around the seeds.
Indeed.
And it's more pronounced with the worst of the tomatoes, those December tomatoes. You have a bigger differential between the hardness of the flesh and then this really soft kind of gel that surrounds the seeds. A lot of the heirloom varieties have a much better flesh ratio to seed anyway, that definitely helps. Help some people that have texture issue with tomatoes.
Well, when you get your hands on a really delicious tomato at the height of tomato season, what is your favorite thing to do with it?
The first thing I always make is a BLT. That's what I wait for all year. I usually wait till the height of the season, not with the first tomatoes, but you want a great big tomato. You want one that you only have to take 1 3/4 to an inch thick slice out of to cover the whole piece of bread. The pound plus tomatoes you guys were talking about earlier is what you're looking for there. Good bacon.
And I've heard that bacon season and tomato season coincide.
As a matter of fact, they do. When I started in the meat distribution business, that was something that I found out, that bacon prices spiked when tomatoes are in season. BLTs are a big thing everywhere, apparently.
How do you make a good BLT?
First and foremost, obviously the tomato. I like to use generally a yellow varietal.
Why?
I like a little bit milder acidity that yellow tomatoes tend to have on a BLT. I usually use bacon from Burger Smokehouse. It's a Missouri product that I'm a big fan of. Cooked to crispy. It can't be leathery. It has to be done. I usually cook it in a 375 degree oven for about 15 minutes. Lettuce. You can use whatever you want, but I mean, iceberg is kind of the thing. It's not, you know, there's not a whole lot to it. It's not really for flavor so much as for crunch on this sandwich.
There's a lot in there for crunch. We've got the crispy bacon.
Right.
The crunchy lettuce.
Right. Mayonnaise. If you're not going to make your own, Hellman's is probably the way to go.
How do you make your own?
Make your own. Very simple recipe would be an egg yolk, a whole egg, 2 tablespoons of sherry vinegar, 1 tablespoon of mustard, Dijon or yellow, and about 1.5 cups of oil. Put in a food processor blender, put your eggs, vinegar, and mustard, and then slowly drizzle in your olive oil with it running till it emulsifies. And then bread, there's all kinds of options. Thinking back to childhood, I always go to white bread to start off with, but I really like a BLT on grains galore from Farm to Market, or the polenta bread from Favre, I think makes an excellent BLT as well. I like to toast it under the broiler and just toast one side of the bread.
Why?
So you can leave the interior bread soft to soak up the juices from the tomato.
Good idea.
So, and
speaking of the tomato, mm-hmm. I happen to know you have a little trick about how to slice that tomato so it doesn't slide right off the sandwich.
Well, at home, I will peel the tomato with a knife, with a very sharp knife. It's nothing I ever did in restaurants because I would have spent most of my day peeling tomatoes. But At home, I do like to take a really sharp knife and peel. Don't like to plunge it into hot water or anything because I think that can mess up the taste a little bit. But if you peel the tomato, you don't end up, because I like to make a really thick slice of tomato, and the skin on that can pull the tomato off your sandwich. So if you take a really sharp knife and get right underneath the skin, you can peel it off really nicely. Slice a nice thick slice of tomato, and it goes tomato, lettuce, bacon, mayonnaise, stacked on your bread. Tomatoes
on the
bottom. So
that's from bottom to top.
From bottom to top.
Okay. And I wonder if you have a good tomato recommendation for vegetarian listeners.
For vegetarians, there's lots of things you can do with tomatoes, but one of my favorite things to do in the summer is, especially with cherry tomatoes, smaller tomatoes, is if I'm grilling, I will throw a pan on the grill and put about a quarter inch of oil, olive oil in the bottom of it. Get it really good and hot. You can throw in, and depending on how much you like garlic, you can use whole cloves of garlic. You can chop your garlic. It just depends on how much of that flavor you want. Throw that in your olive oil, and right after the garlic starts to brown, probably take a pound and a half of tomatoes, cut in half, and just dump that in the oil and let it fry over the grill. You'll get a good flavor from the grill on it. And also, it's tomato season, so it's going to be hot. So I find it ideal to cook this outside so you're not heating up your house. You want to cook it for about 15, 20 minutes. If you want to, throw some wood chips in the grill, cover it, let it smoke, get some smoke to it, and then just eat that over grilled bread with a salad. It's delicious.
Can you describe the taste of the result for us?
The result is just tomato intensified. Is what you're really looking at there is really, really good summer tomatoes with extra added sweetness from cooking down all the juices. And it's just, you know, something that we eat quite a bit at my house.
Well, I want to join this conversation with Dave Crum. I want to add Stu Schaefer and Keith Mueller back into it as we discuss a little more as a group, the taste of tomatoes. As our listeners prepare to make the delicacies Dave just described at home, those who don't grow their own will be going shopping, which brings us back to the market. With all the different kinds of tomatoes out there, all kinds of tomato terms get thrown around. What are some terms that you think are useful, some different varieties people might run across and what they have to offer?
A lot of people really like what's called the Brandywine tomato. And in my breeding program, that's one of the key things I've used. So the ones I brought today, most of those have Brandywine in the background.
What is Brandywine?
Brandywine, they believe, is a tomato, comes from the Pennsylvania Amish. There's some confusing history about it, and a lot of people have named different yellow Brandywine, black Brandywine. It doesn't matter so much. It's the Brandywines are pink, they're large, and they have a real good balance of sugar and acid. And like I said, they're very meaty. The acid flavor in a tomato is generally around the seeds, and the sugar is generally actually around the outside of the tomato where the sunlight hits.
Acid and sugar, are those the two main tastes in a tomato?
Yeah, and some people don't like Brandywines because they find them too sweet. So, you know, it, like Dave was saying, he likes the milder tomatoes. So there's a balance in everything. So,
what about you, Stu?
The idea of the yellow tomatoes kind of throws some people off. People, you know, who haven't really explored very much with tomatoes say, well, a tomato's red and it's got to be, you know, deep red, ripe. But the different colors, the yellows, the pinks, the stripes. Keith's got some striped tomatoes here, too. The yellow and red stripe kind of combine the characteristics. I think you can describe tomato flavors like you're describing fine wines. And I know people who will do taste tests and compare the flavors of different tomatoes side by side, and you can see that there are lots of differences. So I guess for the customer, explore, try different things, see what you really like and find your favorite and go for it, find it.
Okay, I'm holding a couple of different tomatoes that Keith has brought in. One of them is striped, as Stu was just describing. Tell us what you would expect in the does striping affect taste, Keith?
Striping really doesn't affect taste that much. It's more of a visual thing. However, that one that you're holding happens to be in a background of pink or clear skin.
What do you mean by a background?
There's a gene that either gives you clear skin or yellow skin. So most of the market tomatoes that you see are kind of a orangey red. They have a yellow skin. If you took and peeled it, and I got a little secret about that too. If you peeled it and hold it up to light, you'd see it's yellow. But on the pink tomatoes, it's clear. And there's been some recent research that you could look up online that the pink tomatoes impart more flavor. And you go to different parts of the country. Arkansas is one, and the Ozarks used to be that way, and the parts of the Carolinas, they won't accept anything but a pink tomato.
Do you mind if I just take a bite out of this?
I brought them for that. That was probably pretty tart.
Tart indeed, but yeah, flavorful. Really flavorful, like you described, and I do taste the sweetness in it. Pardon me, I don't like to eat on the microphone. But and I wonder, I might get Dave to do the next tomato tasting, but tell us your trick for slicing tomatoes that you alluded to just now.
Oh, not to plug any certain part, but OXO, I know, makes one, and you can find it at Target, but they're serrated peelers. So they're like a potato peeler, but they're serrated. And those will just peel the tomatoes very easy. So if you're not very good with the knife and don't want to lose your thumb, find one. They're about $7 or $9 a piece. And if you keep it covered and sharp, it'll last for quite a while. But so that's very easy to do.
Dave Crum, how would you describe the tomato that you are now holding?
It's a purple top, pink in the bottom, going to red at the flower end. I'm not sure what kind of tomato am I holding.
Well, that actually is a cross between a wild type of tomato, actually a couple of wild types, and the normal type. And so the Oregon State University, they started looking at what's called anthocyanins. So anthocyanins are the reds, the purples. That's a very deep purple, and they have a variety they've released called Indigo Rose. And those are really special. Those are really going to knock your socks off. But that anthocyanin they were looking at, it's just on the surface. Those are real popular right now. I was able to obtain that breeding material early on, and so I can taste the wild parent in it. And to me, it's astringent. So I started crossing it with the Brandywine background stuff and the Cherokee Purple to try to get a better flavor into it.
So Dave,
and it's a little bit better.
What do you have to say about the taste?
It's a terrific tomato.
Thank you.
Any other details to share?
It's good and savory, not overly sweet, not overly acidic, really nice balance. It's definitely would be great in a salad, great with things like this one makes me think of things like feta cheese and red onion and maybe some oregano, things like that, olive oil. So, yeah, and you could even – this one could take vinegar as well because it's not overly acidic.
Okay, remind us the name of the tomato that he's just eating.
I don't have a name
for it.
Oh,
not a name.
They're all in the progress.
The purple, pink, red one. Well, and Stu now has a small yellow tomato that you have described as special.
Yeah, this one's yellow. It's yellow at the shoulder or the top, and then it kind of blends into a pinkish red toward the bottom. The flesh is yellow, so I bit into that, and that is a great tomato flavor. Again, the balance, you don't. I think the yellow is probably keeping the acidity down, but it's not sugary sweet at all. It's, you know, when you think of tomato flavor, it's really intense with that tomato flavor, and I don't know how else to describe tomato flavor. It's a little salty. You know, it probably stimulates that salt flavor in our mouth, but that's a great tomato.
I call that one Sun Lucky, and I'll probably release it soon. It's got a couple of different heirlooms in the background, but it's also got a variety called Sun Gold, which is super sweet. And so it has a tropical overtone to it. Mm-hmm. And some people have said mangoes.
A tropical overtone. Interesting.
Yeah. And so some people said mangoes, some people said pineapple, and they were just incredible last year in the heat, and they're watery this year.
Yeah.
But they still have flavor, so I know I'm on the right track.
So when people are out in the market and they see these different colors and sizes, are there certain taste qualities that they might associate with certain colors or sizes of tomato in general?
Generally, I would say the cherry tomatoes have intensity of flavor, pack a lot of intensity of flavor. Sun Gold specifically is one of our market favorites. I think it does, that we were talking earlier, that it does well in markets. It sells well. For the fried tomatoes, the Sun Gold is a great choice. They are extremely sweet. And, yeah, with the water this year, a lot of them have split. Mm-hmm. You can make a terrific gazpacho out of those split ones, though.
Oh,
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I have customers who describe Sungolds as like eating candy, and they'll get a pint of Sungolds in their CSA bag, and so they don't even make it home. Mm-hmm. They eat them in the car.
That's a very healthy variety of candy.
Yes.
Very last question for you. When you slice a tomato, would you use a bread knife that is serrated? We had a caller who just could not resist sharing that concept, and I wonder what you think.
I'll go first because I'm not the expert. I do.
Well, all right. That's all the time we have for today's show about tomatoes. As you've probably heard, we've been collecting your input on tomato costs and stories, and we've used that information to map the cost of a tomato in Kansas City. Go to kcur.org to check that out. Dave Crum of Arrowhead Specialty Meats and Crum's Family Heirlooms, Stu Schaefer of Johnson County Community College, and Keith Mueller, also known as KC Tomato, thank you. It's been fun today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
To listen back to today's show or any past conversations, go to kcur.org/centralstandard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date. That's coming up next. And by the way, our show is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, with lots of help from lots of other people. Thanks again. Stick around for Up to Date.
Eat them with eggs and eat them with gravy. You can eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on the side, put them in the middle. A homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that one can't buy.